If you're a dog lover or if you have dogs, have you ever wondered why so many dogs are suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more health issues with dogs than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place where we can look to support any dog's health, and that's their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Now, Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And I actually love giving Mojo this as a topper. I feel good that there are no fillers and it's also air dried. So that means it retains more nutrients. Mojo's usually pretty picky about what he eats. So I'm glad that he now enjoys every meal. And now you can treat your dogs to healthy, nutritious food. Go to badlandsfood.com/dateable and order right now to get up to 50% off your first regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsfood.com/dateable today.
The Dateable Podcast is an insider's look into modern dating that the Huffington Post calls one of the top 10 podcasts about love and sex. On each episode, we'll talk to real daters about everything from sex parties to sex droughts, date fails to diaper fetishes, and first moves to first loves. I'm your host, Yue Xu, former dating coach turned dating sociologist. You'll also hear from my co-host and producer, Julie Krafchik, as we explore this crazy dateable world.
Hello, Dateables! Welcome to another episode of the Dateable Podcast, where it is our mission, Julie and I, to help you figure out why people do the things they do, why they say the things that they say, and then how you can navigate it all in this world called modern dating.
Whew, that's a lot. I love...
We come full circle.
I know. And we are taking a trip back in time. We are traveling back to 2004 when the book He's Just Not That Into You was released. We have Greg Berendt, who is the author that, you know, I'm sure pretty much everyone has heard the phrase, He's Just Not That Into You. It started with Sex and the City. He was a writer on the show, became a book, became a movie. And I feel like it was like the words of wisdom that many women listen to. And I would say debatably, we could argue that now it just is, should be they are just not that into you, because I think the same thing applies to all genders, all sexualities, all of that.
We loved this movie so much when it came out simply because it gave you so many answers to why is this person doing things this way or said this? Because often in dating, what we're trying to do is win the other person over, but we're ignoring all the signs and they're very clear. And frankly, people are pretty honest on the first couple of dates. So this movie was eye-opening for me because by the end of it, I was like, that's it. I'm wasting my time with people who are not into me.
Yeah. I mean, I think I definitely like the movie, but in the Sex and the City, you know, I'm a huge Sex and the City fan, but I feel like it when Miranda got that intel from Carrie's boyfriend at the time, Berger, for all the Sex and the City fans, her mind was just blown because she's like, I have wasted so many hours, you know, like analyzing and overthinking and debating if someone liked me or not, or if they were going to call, if they were going to make the next move, all that stuff, where it could be just that simple. If you take what someone's saying or what they're not saying, I think that's the key. The inaction is just as important as the action at face value.
And in this interview, we get to hear it from Greg himself, because did you know that Greg is the person behind this book, behind this saying? Can you believe it? And he is a hetero man who's been married for many years. He was a writer on Sex and the City. He's the one that came up with this idea that was so simple and intuitive to him, and to the women around him were just so mind blown by the entire thing. So it's really funny to hear it from his perspective.
It is. But, you know, I feel like there is the simplification, but there's clearly a lot of nuance in life, which is why we have the whys and why we have the hows. But we had a big week last week, and I feel like I'm just like kind of taking a breather now, but we sold out our Finding Your Person program. So we're very excited. We're super pumped to work with all the people that signed up. We have 50 folks in the program, which was our max capacity. And, you know, we're ready to go and help them on their journey, that adventure.
That was a whirlwind of a launch because we had been prepping for this for years, but we never knew how it was going to be received until launch week came. And I think it makes us so happy to see so many of you are excited to be part of this program. But also for those of you who are still debating, maybe want to take some time first before joining, you still have a chance because if you go to findingyourperson.com now, you can join the next wait list and we'll let you know when we open up the program again. Mm-hmm. So you didn't miss your chance completely, but also congrats to all the people who joined this one because you got in right on time.
The reality is we're not quite sure when it's going to launch again. I think part of it is we want to run through this program at least once with the folks and, you know, learn from it too. But I think just getting in the loop, because it did sell out relatively quickly. I mean, we had to like pull in our date because we just had too much demand. So if you are on the edge or you're not on the waitlist yet, you can still join findingyourperson.com. It's all there, except you unfortunately cannot sign up anymore.
But it's okay. Just get on our list anyway. You'll get all the good stuff. We promise. Some of the other fun things just been happening is I think this is spurring up a lot of debate on what does finding your person even mean? We've gotten a lot of DMs and emails, people thinking, I'm really interested in this program because I am really interested in finding my person. We put up a poll on Instagram that asked, would you rather find a connection or would you rather find love? And 90% of people said, I'd rather find a connection.
Interesting.
And I think that's very telling because love is almost this idea, but connection is something very tangible. And until you find connection, you can't really find love yet.
Yeah, I saw some of the responses saying they were one and the same. And I'm not quite sure I agree with that. I don't know. I guess it's just maybe it's how you define love. Because I think you can love people that you don't feel connected to, and you could feel connected to people that you don't necessarily love.
I also feel like love takes a while to get there, but connection can happen pretty fast. And I think love is the next step to a stronger connection. So I think, yes, they're one the same once you're at that stage. But in the beginning, I think a strong connection is definitely the most important thing.
Absolutely. There was also another really interesting debate on Instagram and Facebook. We put up a quote around like, find someone that is obsessed with you. I think it sounds like slightly different. That sounds super creepy when I say it out loud.
No, I think that is it.
Was it?
But it is creepy when you say it out loud.
You deserve someone who is utterly obsessed with you.
Obsessed with you, yeah. Okay,
so I hear what people are saying. You don't want someone that you need to get restraining orders on. I don't think anyone's saying that that's a good situation. We all want someone that has a life of their own also. Like, all that's a given. I think where the sentiment of it is coming from that I think a lot – that resonated with a lot of people because, yeah, there were the people that kind of commented like that. But I would say also got a ton of people being like, hell yeah, like, this is what I want. Tons of, like, interaction compared to other posts we put on and likes, etc. And I think the sentiment that resonates with me is someone that, you know, just feels lucky to freaking be with you, like the same way that you feel lucky to be with them. That's what I think it means. Not restraining order. No one's advocating for that here.
It's a fuck yes mentality. Yeah. And I think we say obsessed in a way that is a very trendy way of saying, not like obsessed like crazy, but someone who is just so into you, but it has to be reciprocated.
Yes.
You also have to be obsessed with them too. I think that's what is the missing sentence.
Yes.
It can't be a one way street.
No. And I think it needs to be healthy too. I think the point of like, it can't be like, yes, I want someone who thinks I'm their world for sure, but they also need to have other planets orbiting too. It can't just be me either.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see it just a one-way obsession, and that would just not be good. Nope. That's why there's so many movies being made about that. But I think ultimately when you have these insecurities about someone you're dating, because they're not texting you back or you're not hearing from them, no matter what's going on in their life and what their intentions are, it's impacting you in a way that's negative, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't feel like they're that into you. So why would you want to be with someone and give someone the time when they're just not as into you as you are into them?
No.
Right? Why wouldn't you just move on?
Absolutely. And I think like a big, I don't know, I actually went to a bachelorette party this weekend in Palm Springs, which was super fun. to, you know, mm-hmm. be, I feel like I haven't been out. We went to a gay club. That was super fun. But I think one of the revelations I had, we were talking about it, and this is a friend I've known since I moved to San Francisco. So, you know, coming on 12 years now. And I knew her before her current partner that she's getting married to, but they've been together for 7 years. And like on one side, I totally see 7 years because they've built, you know, a foundation and a relationship and a partnership, also in a life. But then the other side, I'm like, wow, where did 7 years go? That feels like it has been not that long, you know? But it served for me was a real kind of a reminder that it takes time. Like, I think sometimes we're mm-hmm. trying to rush everything. And the reality is it takes time to get to know someone. It takes time to build a life with someone. I think the older you get, sometimes it can happen faster just because you are more comfortable with like who you are and what you want and all that stuff. But I also don't think it means that like you have to run at like rampant speed either. There's nothing wrong with taking your time and the fact that like this is another person that you're getting to know. And sometimes it just takes time. And I think in dating, we just don't give enough time. And that's what makes it hard because there's just so many choices and so many people out there. And I'm not saying like if someone's treating you shitty, you should give it more time. But I think if it's not, you know, I'm in love after, you know, even month 6, I feel like that's okay. Like, I think that could grow as long as, you know, the connection is there and it's, you're seeing the progression.
Yeah, I had this, we had a very tumultuous conversation with my mom. So my mom came over for dinner, my mom and my dad, and you can tell she was working up her nerves to ask us something.
Oh God.
In the middle of dinner. So my boyfriend and I are, you know, finishing up the end of dinner. We're having a great conversation and you just see her take a deep breath. And I was like, oh shit, here comes. And of course it's the question of when are you guys going to get married and have kids? And I jokingly asked her, I said, Mom, you can only choose one. Which would it be? And she said, I want both. I want both. And she was very adamant that she wanted these things. So anyway, it all worked out because it helped us have this open discussion. And something I realized was this. In relationships and dating, yes, it's good to look forward to something and mm-hmm. have milestones, but you can't have your future disrupt your present.
No.
If this anxiety over a future milestone is ruining what you currently have, then you need to stop worrying about that future milestone. And I told her that, and I said, you are bringing in the future to interrupt something really great in the present right now. So I like this idea of time and being on your own time. As long as you see progression and you're building towards something, it doesn't matter what those milestones are, and don't let that pressure you. So now she's like, I feel good about that. You know, she's like, I feel good about that conversation. I'm so glad.
So were you able to think up that response in the moment? Because I feel like I would just have gotten defensive.
Yes. So the way I told that story was fast forwarded that night.
I was like, wait, that sounded very chill for the setup.
That night, we didn't even finish our dinner. My parents packed their shit and they just left because they felt so awkward. My boyfriend's washing dishes and he just looks so irritated. And I'm irritated by everyone because I'm like, I'm stuck in the middle here. My parents want one thing. My boyfriend doesn't want one thing. I'm in the middle. Nobody's asking me what I want. So I took a night off and I went into the guest room and I just thought about things and had a really great conversation with my partner the next day and also with my mom. And that's when I came up with this because I was very honest about the fact that I understand that she's looking forward to these things. One, because she's retired.
Yeah.
But two, I think, you know, as a mom of when you're a mom and you have a daughter, these are the things that you want for your daughter. You want her to be protected. You want mm-hmm. her to feel safe, especially when they no longer, you know, they're no longer capable of doing these things. So she's worried about that day when she is not capable and who's going to take care of me. And I told her, as long as we can take care of each other right now in the present, let's enjoy this. Because if we don't, we're wasting your time trying to think about this future scenario that nobody has fucking control over.
Right.
So I think I talked it through with her and I think I got through to her. I really hope so because she promised me that was the last time she was going to bring it up.
You know, I think you you're in a hard position too because you don't have siblings. I feel like because there is, okay, like I'm sure there is this protection piece, but I think there is a little bit of a selfish piece. And I've talked to my mom about this too. Like, I think it's even hard for her that my brother and sister-in-law don't live super close by. So there is a little bit of a selfish piece. And I'm not saying it's selfish in a bad way. I think it's just human nature that like, if it's kind of like when all your friends are getting into relationships or all your friends are getting married, all your friends are having kids. For them, it's all their friends are having grandkids and they get to be with their grandkids, and it brings up that stuff for them. And I think that's totally natural. That's totally natural. And it's hard for you because you have no one else to deflect it.
Oh, you totally get me, Julie. It is so true. Sometimes I wish I just had an older brother or sister
who's
already married with kids. And my parents wouldn't give a shit what I'm doing.
Yeah, my mom does not give me any of that pressure, which I think is, I think she just wants me to be happy. But I think also, like, I think she thinks I, like, can take care of myself, which I think is good. And I think some of that is generational and changes of women and, you know, what's possible. And maybe some of it is just even giving your mom that mindset too. Like, I have this great partner, but I also am pretty freaking capable on my own. You know, I've done all this stuff on my own. Like, it's not like I'm going to be incapable if something were to happen.
Yeah. She did say something. She's never watched Sex and the City, but she did almost quote the show when she said, "You spend your lifetime celebrating other people's life choices. When's it going to be your turn?"
Yeah.
And I remember that episode on Sex and the City, and it made me think, well, my life choices could also be a freaking big ass 40th birthday that I never threw for myself, and I will have a guest list and a registry.
Totally.
So it's just that we're conditioned to think it has to be the wedding and the baby shower and all that stuff that we have to celebrate. Well, there are other reasons to celebrate life too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I read a study that like people that had children, it was like the happiness level of people that had children versus ones that didn't. And, you know, it actually was that people that didn't have children were more consistently happy, but then people that had children had higher highs and lows.
Oh, so, yes.
You know, like they could have intense joy, but they also could have, you know, intense stress and not happiness, you know? So I think it's just a different lifestyle. And I don't think one is right or wrong. It's just different life choices. And I think we need to celebrate that more. Like celebrate even like, I think the Sex and the City where Carrie did her own registry for herself with the shoes.
It is so badass.
But it's true. It's like, why should people only celebrate these societal expectations? Like it should just be celebrating whatever decision you make.
Fuck yes. I'm celebrating next year. It won't be my 40th. It'll be my 41st. But a better reason to celebrate is my 41st fucking birthday. Okay.
Yes.
It's gonna happen.
We're going to Vegas, right?
Or I don't know, somewhere better, yeah. Julie.
I mean, it's your birthday. We'll do whatever you want.
But I really want to go to Vegas. Is that what you're saying? Like, let's
but
do
yeah,
it.
Do yeah, I think Vegas. We should do Vegas now. No, I think it's going to be good. And we are going to celebrate this week. UA and I will be reunited in SF, which will be phenomenal. Like we said, we've been busting our ass to do this program. And we're excited to just, you know, go to dinner and celebrate tomorrow night.
And then our partners get to meet later in
we're
the
gonna
week,
have a double
too,
date.
Which will be fun. Double date. We'll let you all know how it goes. Maybe we'll post some photos. We'll see how we're feeling.
I don't know if my partner would like that. Just saying up front. We'll like put like an emoji.
Yeah, I was gonna say we can put emojis over their head. It's fine. Like they're celebrities.
So basically it's UA and I in a photo.
Exactly. With emojis. But it's good. It'll be good. I've had so many great life conversations this week because I've caught up with girlfriends who recently had babies. And they've said the same thing as you, Julie. It's the highs are really high and the lows are really fucking low. And the lows get to a point where they didn't even realize they could go that low. So I get it. This is everything in life. And this is something I heard recently was live in a state of impermanence. Mm-hmm. Just know that everything is sort of changeable and everything is changing and evolving. So whatever situation you're in right now, it's going to change.
Right.
It's never going to be like this forever. So when you're in your highs, know that it doesn't stay there. When you're in your lows, know it doesn't stay there. Know that when you're anxious about someone not texting you back, know that it passes. And if you're going through a heartbreak, it's also impermanent. It's all going to pass and we're in a constant state of change. And I think that is just so liberating to acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm. And I think with this episode too, what I love about this is, you know, I think I think sometimes we say things are shades of gray and they shouldn't be this black and white. But I do think if someone's not showing up for you, it almost is that mm-hmm. black and white. Like there's other parts of relationships that are shades of gray. But I think the basic, you know, the basic showing up, especially in the early stages, that shouldn't be. That is very mm-hmm. black and white. Someone, you know, is into it or they're not. And if they're not for whatever reason, like I feel like we're people's PR agents. We always talk about that. Oh, always. They're too busy or they just got out of a relationship, then let them be busy. Let them deal with their heartbreak. And if they're ready, then they'll come back around when they're ready to give it their all. I think that's so mm-hmm. much better than, you know, taking crumbs, like the breadcrumbs that someone's giving you when they're just not fully in.
Yeah. And know that it's not personal.
No.
It may have nothing to do with you. It may just be whatever they're going through right now. And it just does not involve you in the picture. And that is okay. And it's freeing to know that.
Yeah.
So you can move on.
I talked about this with our Finding Your Person program, but when I was back in Boston over COVID in the wintertime, I met mm-hmm. someone virtually and we talked on the phone, like we talked on video chat, we talked on text like all the time. I like thought I found my person. I think I like mm-hmm. texted you this, yep. which sounds so dumb in retrospect, but I think a lot of people went.
It's not dumb.
I think a lot of people went through this with virtual. I think all virtual could really fuck with you. That's my opinion. But I think I really thought that there was something. We were counting down the days till I got home back to mm-hmm. San Francisco. He's like, I'll meet you at the airport with balloons. Like it was this whole thing. And then he just fell off the face of the universe. And he just mm-hmm. became too busy. Work was too busy. There were family issues, like everything. And it's like if someone can't find an hour to meet up with you when they claim they want to so badly, they just don't want it that bad. And maybe there was something mm-hmm. going on in his life. Like, I just don't know, obviously. But I think we're like kind of netted out with it was like, okay, if things change for you, like, let me know, but I'm moving forward. And I guess, spoiler alert, he never let me know. So I guess that was kind of.
Well, you never met up,
no,
right?
No, we never met up.
Which is a crazy part.
We never met up. No.
You were already developing feelings for this person.
And it seems reciprocal, too. It seemed very reciprocal, at least through there, you know? It was crazy. But where I'm going with this is with my current partner from day one, it was just easy. Like, it mm-hmm. was none of this, you know? And I think until you see that, it puts everything else in perspective that if someone really wants, one, they're ready for a relationship, and two, they like you, mm-hmm. they're going to make it happen. Like, because they want to make it happen. There's no excuse.
Yep. And it shows when you're ready to find your person. I know I've been through phases where I thought, oh, this seems too easy. And I feel like there should be more of a chase. I feel like I should be guessing more. Then I knew that I was not ready to be in a relationship. So a lot of this is not just you learning about the other person. You're also learning about yourself. So be curious and observe how you're dealing with the situation.
Yeah.
Question?
Yeah, let's do our question.
Question is another situation. Situations, ships that we've been talking about. This one's related to this episode, like all of these questions are. But this is another one of those popular questions, which is, how do you know when the person you're dating is not into you or is playing hard to get?
Mm-hmm. Situationships. Yeah. That is the worst yep. term in dating, I think.
Yes. I love that that's even a question. That is this person really not into me, or they're just so into me that they're making an effort to show that they're not into me? Like, how can these two situations be on the same plane? I don't even know. So this question in itself bothers me to no extent because I've been here a million times. I've asked the exact same thing. But ultimately, I think the answer is, how does this person make you feel? If you feel like you're not desired or wanted, or this person is even making time to be with you, it doesn't matter if they're playing hard to get or they're not into you, because they're not meeting your needs. And so this question is a moot point.
Yes. I was going to say it almost doesn't matter. And I think, too, it's, do you want someone that you can't text? I think I always thought about that when, you know, women aren't supposed to text back or initiate texts or wait 3 days or all the stupid BS. Do you want someone that you are thinking about when you should land your text message? I don't.
Yep.
Is that the type of person you want in a relationship? Because I think early dating, yes, you don't know the person as well and everyone's kind of on their best behavior a little. But I think the more real you can be in early stage dating, the less surprises there are once things actually develop. And I think it doesn't almost matter if it's coming from a place of them being playing hard to get or just, you know, be in a bad time. I think people play up timing so much that it's they're busy, there's something going on in their life. It almost doesn't matter. The reality is they're not giving you the time you need right this minute. That's the reality whether they like you or not. So I personally think if you aren't getting what you need from someone, it's sharing that. And if they just don't like you, then it will be like, okay, well, you know, they either ghost you or they say that, you know, it wasn't a fit or whatever. And if they did like you, then on the pro side, it could snap them into better behavior. You know, at the minimum, they could at least reach out later, or, you know, maybe it's just not a fit because you're not compatible of how you view relationships and time.
Think about it. Your early dating stages are to observe if that person would make a good partner for when you're in a relationship. So why would it make sense to not text someone or have someone not text you because they're playing hard to get, be a good indicator of them being a good partner later in life? Because do you really want to be with someone who takes 3 days to text you back because they're trying to win you over? No, it doesn't. Relationships don't work like that. And if you have to play games to be with someone, your entire relationship will be a fucking game and no one wins in that. I remember in New York when I was obsessed with that guy that broke my heart, we had a revisit a year later or something. And I remember I just poured my heart out to him and he couldn't reciprocate. He couldn't say any of the words back. And that night when I went back to my place and he went back to his, as soon as he left and I went back into my apartment, someone tried to break into my apartment. Someone was trying to open the door and I heard them like trying to key my door. And I couldn't text or call that guy because I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to come on too strong. Like, I really need him in this moment. And then I thought, this is a moment when you do need someone. Right. That was really fucking scary. So I end up calling 911, which is, you know, you should do that anyway. But it would have been nice to have someone that I could rely on. And it was so telling that that was not the person.
Yeah. I think, though, it's good that you poured your heart out. I think a lot of people question, should I do it or should I just kind of wait and also play hard to get and see what happens? But I think, like we're saying, wouldn't you rather just know? I think, like, because if you know, okay, if let's say they really are playing hard to get or they're not sure how you feel, that gives them permission to be like, I feel the same way. If they don't feel that way, it's going to suck in the moment, but you're not going to spend another 3 months or 6 months or however long wondering. And I think it's really hard to date other people when that person's in your mind still. So as much as it will sting, knowing and using that knowledge and making that mental like cutoff to move forward is so important.
Oh, I hate that. I hate being stuck in that stage. I'd rather just know.
Oh,
just
definitely. Tell me. Definitely. Even like when I would go on like one or two dates, I'm like, I'd rather be the one that reaches out to learn that it's not a fit than to wait by my phone and, you know, play the game. Who has time for that? Because that just allows you to move on and meet someone that's not doing any of that shit.
Yeah, better use of your time. And don't forget, if you find that someone's playing hard to get with you, that is not necessarily a good thing. It means they're trying to win you over. It doesn't mean that they like you. It just means they're trying to win this pageant. So fuck them. They can go win another pageant if they want to. You're not a contestant here.
It means that they're not ready for a relationship is what it means. Yeah. So you're going to find that out in 3 months. Once they finally get you, then it will be over. So it's like you might as well move on to someone ready.
Oh, move on.
Don't you love it? We're giving black and white advice just like our guest today. He's rubbed off on us. Before we get into the episode with Greg, quick announcements. Love in the Time of Corona. That is our Facebook group. That's the public group. We have @DateablePodcast is our Instagram handle. And then we have the Sounding Board, which is our premium community where we have our weekly sound offs now that are guided discussions with our host team. We are talking about like overcoming FODA. We have another one about communication, especially in times of conflict, traveling. dealing with dating. There's a lot of good ones on the roster in the next 3 months. And the team that leads these are freaking amazing. We also have office hour chats with UA and I, so you can drop in, ask us your burning dating questions, you know, get that feedback. So it's great. I mean, everyone that's in the community are just incredible people. They're the ones that did the meetup in San Francisco a couple weeks ago. Definitely get in on the fun. So datablepodcast.com/soundingboard. Awesome. Let's get into a few quick messages from our sponsors.
Do you want to get 6 bottles of wine for $29.95? Oh yeah, listen until the end of this message. Anyone who drinks wine knows the options are endless, which is why finding a wine I like can be hit or miss. But now that I'm a First Leaf Wine Club member, I don't have to worry about that. If you're not familiar with First Leaf, let me tell you all about it. It is a wine club that curates and ships wines that are perfect for you. And since they work with renowned winemakers from all over the world, there's virtually no limit to the variety of wines you get to try. And when you rate the wine you receive, they learn more about your palate. And I'm having so much fun discovering wines that I would have never known about in the first place, like my current bottle of Grenache by La Douleur Exquise. I know, I sound so fancy. First Leaf is so confident you'll love the wine, they have a 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you receive a bottle that isn't exactly where you were hoping for, they will credit your account. Join today and you'll get 6 bottles of wine for $29.95 and free shipping. Just go to tryfirstleaf.com/datable. That's 6 bottles of wine for $29.95 and free shipping at tryfirstleaf.com/DATEABLE.
Okay, let's hear it from Greg.
In 2009, a movie came out. Can you guess what that movie was called? Because everybody watched this movie. It was called He's Just Not That Into You. And this concept was so groundbreaking that women everywhere declared, if he doesn't do this, he's just not that into you. If he doesn't do that, he's just not that into you. But I just looked back at the cast list because I kind of forgot who was in it. Jennifer Goodwin. Does she always play this character? Do you feel like this is just her role for life? This is all she does.
Oh my God, totally. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, totally.
So Jennifer Goodwin, Jennifer Aniston was in this movie, Jennifer Connelly, all the Jennifers were in this movie. But the person who created, who was the mastermind behind this movie, is our guest today. His name is Greg Berendt. He is the author of the New York Times best-selling book, He's Just Not That Into You.
Co-author.
Co-author.
Yeah, I gotta say co-author.
All right, yeah. Fine. Co-author. He's just not that into you. And it's called A Breakup Because It's Broken, as well as It's Just a Fucking Date and How to Keep Your Marriage from Sucking. All these titles are freaking amazing.
Thank you.
58 years old. He lives in LA. He's been in LA for 16 years, originally from San Francisco. I didn't know that. And he is married. Hi, Greg.
Hi. How are you?
Hey, Greg. We're so excited to have you. And also, Greg is the host of Don't Take Bullshit from Fuckers, which UA and I were both guests on. And we had his co-host, Kate Holloway, on the podcast as well. I feel like Don't Take Bullshit from Fuckers is so your brand, Greg. I feel like that fits 100% with all your book titles.
It is my brand. I like it if the answer is in the title.
Yeah, there you go.
I like it so you really don't have to explain a lot. Don't take bullshit from Fuckers.
I was on a plane ride recently, and one of the movie options was He's Just Not That Into You. So I watched the movie very recently.
Uh-huh.
And yeah. I actually thought that I didn't realize that you were a consultant for Sex and the City, because that's where the term originally originated from. Can you tell us a little bit about the story, of how the term came to be? Because I read it, but I would love to hear it from your words, because I think it's a good one.
It's a good story. I mean, it's just one of those things that happened. I was, I worked as a consultant on the show since season 2, and it was the last season, and we were writing, and we were on a lunch break, and one of the girls asked me about a guy she was seeing, and she said she'd been seeing this guy for a while, and they'd gone on 10 dates or something.
Wow.
And she invited him up to have sex, and he said no, he had to do something. And so she said, do you think that's bad? And then I just stared at her, and then and then eventually I said, yeah, it's not good. It's definitely not good. You know, he's just not that into you. And I don't remember saying it, but there was another person present for the conversation, who was Liz DiCillo, who's the co-author of the book. And she sort of grabbed onto the phrase and said, "That's genius." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "He's just not that into you." And so then we went back into the writer's room, and we all started talking about it, and everybody started asking me these questions. So if a guy doesn't call you, that means he doesn't like you? And I was like, yes, that is correct.
It just seems so common sense to you. At the time, were you single? Were you dating?
I think I was engaged, if not married.
Okay. So you're like, it doesn't have to be this complicated. You all are just making...
It just doesn't have to be that hard. Right. Yeah, it doesn't have to be that hard. And everyone's making it so complicated. And they would always find excuses for the guy why he wasn't getting, you know, maybe he's shy, maybe he's intimidated.
I mean, even in 2021, like one of the things that we want to do on this episode is take a look back in time, because it was originally published in 2004, and see like what's relevant current day and what's not. But I feel like UA and I come across this all the time of people being each other's like PR agents, like making this story up mm-hmm. to justify bad behavior. This is totally. Still going on current day, if not worse, because, you know, there's so many more people that are in the mix. And less accountability because of dating apps or no ties to social circles, et cetera.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we're living in a different structured world, but the rules are always the same. The book based on a very basic foundation, and it still applies. You know, if you're not getting any attention from somebody, they're not interested.
Right, unless they have diarrhea, which is what happened to Miranda on Sex.
That's what happened to Miranda. I totally forgot about
that episode. But why? Okay, so let's back up for a sec. How did you even become a male consult for Sex in the City to begin with? What gave you that credibility?
Well, that's a really good story. The executive producer and I used to do stand-up together.
Mm. Oh.
And so he was just an old buddy. I was doing a lot of stuff about gender politics and that kind of stuff when I first started out. He really just loved me. And then he came to me. This is exactly how he asked me. This is a true story. It's a little dirty, but...
Oh, we like dirty.
He said, "Do you want to come over to Sex in the City and tell the women what pussy tastes like, because nobody here seems to know?"
Valid point.
Some girls remember vaguely from college, but nobody has an answer at the time. There was, you know, 7 women and 2 gay men on the staff.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
And he was legit. He was for real.
So your qualification was that you knew what it tastes like.
That I had some experience in that area, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I remember this episode, I do remember this episode so vividly. We had Candace Bushnell on the podcast too. We're huge Sex and the City fans. But I remember Miranda feeling so liberated and like wanting to pass the gospel along to other women. Why do you think our first inclination is to make so many excuses for these people that we're dating, when it's clear, if you break it down to simplistic terms like you did?
Because I think it's rare to connect. And when you do connect, you want something to be there, and when all of a sudden it disappears, you want to look for an excuse for why it wasn't there. How could it suddenly have changed? Mm. You know, I think women tend to be a little bit more optimistic and hopeful, mm-hmm. and you know, and also more nurturing. So the nurturing side of that conversation is, yeah, you know, he's probably just busy. You know what I mean? Like, you're trying to build them up, you know, but as opposed to just tearing the Band-Aid off and going, "Well, if he hasn't called..."
You mean to tell me that men don't sit around and ask why a girl hasn't texted back?
Or oh, no, I think they do.
Hasn't shown interest?
Oh, no, I think they absolutely do. At the time, when we wrote the book originally, we had wanted to do it for both sexes. And the publisher said, no, men don't care. They're not going to read a book. Make it for women.
Huh. That's probably what's changed one of the most of this time, right? If we were to rewrite this in 2020, because, yeah, Dateable listeners, we have about 60% women, 40% men, mm-hmm. which greatly surprised UA and I when we first started this. Because mm-hmm. similar to your publishers, we're like, no men are going to listen to this. And I think a lot of men have very similar like challenges with dating, you know, and different sexualities have different challenges mm-hmm. with dating. I think maybe like if we were to do this 2020, it would be like, they're just not that into you.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
A little more gender fluid there.
It had to come out in the time frame that it came out, when it came out, because it came out then. then it leads to other things. Then it becomes something else. At this point, you could write a book. They're not that into you. You could write easily, but it sort of was it felt like it was part of a whole woman's moment of being clear, of a clarity for women. Mm. You know, I just happened to ride in on that crest, you know, with a female author whose idea it was to write the book in the first place. So you have to understand that, like, mm-hmm. I didn't see this as a book. I was like, there's no book. How can there be a book in this? It's just obvious stuff. But Liz, the co-author, and my wife really pushed for it and encouraged me to follow through with it and do the book with them.
Yeah, that is so typical of the conversations I had in like the early 2010s, right? I just feel like those were the mm-hmm. conversations I had sitting around with girlfriends being like, oh, you know, he's busy at work and his mother's in town, just making up all kinds of shit just to make me feel better, like he's still interested. But then on the flip side is all my guy friends would sit around and be like, oh yeah, no, she's definitely not interested. They're like much quicker to go the opposite yeah. and say, yeah. oh yeah, she's just not interested. Move on. And so those conversations were happening, but they were just very different conversations. And I do think those conversations are very different today.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. I think that totally makes sense. This was like at the shift of, you know, the women's movement with that. And so much of our making these excuses, I feel like, stem from Cosmo and like Bad Dating Advice and Why Men Love Bitches and like all those books that came mm-hmm. out for so long. It's interesting paradigm shift now, because I think men and women may be like closer in the way they think about things more than ever now, because women essentially became more empowered because mm-hmm. of books like yours, for instance. And then men, I think, have also like dropped some of their guard a bit, show the emotional side a bit more now than ever before too. So it's kind of interesting like how those levers have played out.
Yeah, totally. And I also think, you know, dating isn't as cut and dry as it used to be.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. there's a lot more hanging out. I feel like women do a lot more of the asking than they used to.
Yep, for sure.
You know, society set up just a little bit. You know, it used to be men ask women out. That's just that's how I was raised. You know, that's all I understood was if a guy isn't asking you out, he's not interested, because that's what we're supposed to do.
Yeah. I was just going to say on that note, because Julie loves timelines and I love that she outlined this for us. For all you listeners, if you want to just think back on when this book was written, it was written in 2004. The movie came out in 2009, and now we're in 2021. So in the book, you have a list. He's just not that into you if X, Y, and Z. So let's go through the list and maybe let's talk about, are there any on this list that you would update for 2021?
I don't think so. I think it's all the same.
No, okay.
No, I don't think so. I mean, you could add, I mean, he's not that into you if he's a fuckboy. That wasn't a part of our dialogue back then. The fuckboy wasn't a thing, you know, when we were writing the book.
I feel like players were the old fuckboys. Like, I feel like it just got rebranded.
Yeah, players. It was players. Like, when I was on Oprah, she brought on dudes that were players.
I remember, like, one of my friends was like, what's a fuckboy? And I'm like, it's a player.
It's
basically, of our generation.
But it's also... Yeah. But
that's
it's
a
also,
funnier term.
But fuckboy also accepts the fact that this guy fucks around. Like, a player sounds like a disingenuous human being. A fuckboy is what he is.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
That's what he is. It's no apologies. Player is sort of an apology in a way, but fuckboy is really like, no, I fuck around.
That's a good point. A player, a player is incognito.
Yeah.
And a fuckboy is waving that flag.
Yeah, totally.
Owning it. I love it. So, okay. So our first one on the list, he's just not that into you if he's not asking you out. We kind of talked about this, that it is more socially acceptable for women to ask out men this day and age. I do think there is something to this, though. Like, I think I'm all for women making the first move and asking out. But I think if you're the only person doing it over and over again, like, he's just not that into you. I think that is a clear and true statement. And I don't know. I feel like sometimes we make so many excuses, but if someone wants to hang out, they're gonna make the plan.
Yeah, they
want to hang out.
They want to be with you, so they'll figure it out.
And the rest on this list too, we can go through just a few of them quickly. He's just not that into you if he's not calling you in today's day and age. Probably he's not texting you or communicating with you or mm-hmm. FaceTiming you, whatever that may be.
Sliding into your DMs.
Is this sliding? Yeah, making any sort of connection with you, right? And he's just not that into you if he's he's not dating you, what does that mean?
If he's not making it, if he's not dating you, if he's not actually calling them dates, if he's not making it sort of official, if he's not seeing you. You know, there are women that make whole cloth relationships out of people that they know from work.
I almost feel like this one's gotten worse in 2021. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because people aren't dating.
Yeah, there's a lot of hanging out.
A lot of ambiguity on both sides. Yes. And people are afraid to ask for clarity. Mm-hmm. And what we were always telling women, it was okay for you to ask for clarity.
Yep, 100%.
Yeah.
Why do you think that people stay with people that aren't making that official? Because I think it is such common sense. Like if he's not calling you his girlfriend or she's not calling you her boyfriend, that means something. Yet we hear I think some of the biggest questions UA and I get are from people that are trying to make something work that isn't. Like, why do you think we're even doing that?
I think people are so grateful in love that somebody is showing attention to them that they're afraid there's nothing else out there for them.
Yes.
You know what I mean? We don't use the same parameters as we would use everywhere else in life, you know? And so we have this like, well, fuck, but he does come over and he does, you know, he did spend the night 2 weeks ago. So,
yep.
You know.
Yeah. It's so interesting, though. We always hear that, you know, paradox of choice is a problem with dating apps because there's so many people out there, yet we have the scarcity mindset so much. Like,
all the time.
Why do we think that?
I don't know, because we don't believe, all of us don't believe that we're worthy of love or deserve love or can have love, you know, or know what it looks like. We haven't seen it yet. So we think this is what love is because we haven't seen it yet. We haven't had a really good, you know, and when you finally have that really good example of love, generally lock it down.
And what's the general consensus of the statement? Because I can see some of our listeners reading deep into the statement saying, oh, he's just not that into you, but he's still somewhat into you.
Well, that's why we put the that. He's just not that into you, which means he's showing you some.
Right.
You're getting little bits and pieces and crumbs, but you're not getting the whole piece. You're not getting the whole slice.
So the lesson to be learned is you want someone who is that into you, right? Mm-hmm. Like we want the whole pie. You don't want just crumbs. So let's just stop this thinking of, well, the statement is just he's not that into you. Well, you do want someone who is that into you. That should be the goal. Right.
It almost doesn't matter why either. Like I think so many times we get hung up on like, oh, they're just busy at work or they're getting over something or they're going through something in their life. And I know I've been there here before also that like I did have an ex that I do believe like did truly care about me, but he maybe wasn't just that into me in the sense that like he couldn't make it really work. I definitely was in that period that I would justify a lot of things for that reason. But at the same time, like if that's not what you want either, like what's the point in even making those justifications? Like even if it's legit, like who cares?
Yeah, no, totally.
So some of the other statements on your list, they're pretty... I feel like they're pretty common sense. He's just not that into you. He's not having sex with you. Doesn't want to have sex with you. Having sex with someone else. He's breaking up with you. He's married or in other relationships. Or he's a selfish jerk or bully or really big freak. But there's also some statements that I think are not as obvious. For example, he's just not that into you if he's disappeared on you. In today's terms, he's ghosted you, or that he is not, what's the other one? He only sees you when he's drunk. That's another one that I think when we look at these patterns, maybe it's not so obvious, but if you look at it over a course of time, yes, that's pretty obvious. So what do we do in these situations when it appears? What do? Do we just get rid of the person or do we confront them? What is the next course of action?
Well, I think once you've noticed a pattern, then you owe it to the person to bring it up at least and say, look, this is something I'm noticing. I'm not really crazy about it. It makes me think that you really aren't that into me. Give them an opportunity to either defend themselves or get help. You know, there are many variety of things that they could respond to. And then if it comes back up again, then it's time to pack it up.
I think the only thing here, I totally agree on most, you know, heteronormative relationships. I totally think all of these hold true, even in 2021. I think the one thing maybe around like the sex piece, he's just not that into if he's having sex with someone else. Like there are a lot of people that have open arrangements or, you know, polyamorous arrangements. So I think there's some of that has probably adapted a bit in current times.
Yeah, I would amend that to say unless the construct of your relationship is different.
Right. Right.
If you have that kind of a relationship, then you have that understanding. So that's not one you would consider, you know. And some of these, you know, remember we were trying, we're two TV writers. So we were trying to be funny. You know, there's a big attempt in this book to be almost ironic about
it. Yeah, and that makes sense. But also it became such a popular book and movie that I think it became almost the Bible for some people.
Oh my God, I've heard people say that.
I definitely did not know that you were like a comedian when I read that book. I thought it was written well and it was funny, but I thought it was like a dating expert kind of giving this advice.
Yeah, no, we were really clear. I think even the book we say at the beginning, we're both two TV writers. And this book is just our opinion. this is our experience and what we've gleaned from just our own dating lives, you know, and what we know from life.
So as a married man working on Sex and the City, writing this book, you've been in the writer's room with a bunch of women who've probably told you all of their love life stories. Mm-hmm. What is your take on modern dating today?
It's really hard for me to have a take without actually being a person dating. You know, like Kane was my connection to dating for a while. Now he's with somebody. I would encourage, you know, I was constantly like, are you on the apps and doing and what's that like? And what, you know, tell me how an interaction goes and when do you know to follow up and how soon do you get on FaceTime with somebody? And, you know, I was really interested in what his experience and what the opening lines were and what the opening gambit was when he knew he was, how do you stop when you don't want to be with anybody anymore, you know, or you don't want to interact with them anymore. You know, I was just really curious about what that was like, because I have no idea, you know.
Well, you guys get a ton of people writing in on Don't Take Bullshit from Fuckers.
Yeah.
And I feel like you should just give them a copy of your book for most of it. Like, I guess like when people write you this stuff, like what goes through your mind? Like
they think they have the story that proves me wrong.
Mm.
Like, well, my story's different. And then you're like, no, your story's exactly the same.
Always.
It's the same as every other story that I've read. It's always the same.
We get the same.
And the longer the email, the worse it is.
Right. Yes. Yes.
You know, if it's like 3 or 4 paragraphs, it's like this thing is
because over. They think the details make it unique.
And you get them too. I'm sure you do too. You get emails that are like, scroll, scroll, scroll.
Yeah. We love reading them, though.
So I definitely agree with like the majority of it. I think I can see this in my current relationship where it's just so easy. And it makes me be like, why did I stand for things that weren't easy? And when people talk about things that aren't easy, you're like, what are you doing? But at the same time, humans are involved. And I think like, for instance, like even, you know, if someone doesn't call you back right away or there's something there, they could be just doing some other facet of life. Like, how do you balance that with this statement?
We used to be really clear in the book. We're not saying a guy forgets to call you and then you just toss him out, you know, but we're like, when it starts to crop up and you find yourself telling your girlfriends, you know, he never calls me back or he only texts me in one word answers, or, you know, when it becomes something you're discussing, then it's time to look at that. Is that a red flag? You know, otherwise, you know, we're not saying being insane. Right. You know, we're not saying like, he didn't call me, Greg, so I told him to go fuck himself. You know, we're not encouraging that kind of behavior at all. But when it becomes something that comes up, you know, more than a few times, then it's time to look at it for what it is so that you don't waste time.
Right. So it's patterns more than one-offs.
It's patterns. Yeah, it's patterns and it's repeat offending and, you know, it's all that kind of stuff.
If you woke up single tomorrow and you had to date, like someone forced you to date, how would you do it differently than what people are doing today?
How would I do it? I have no idea. Well, I'd start looking around my AA meetings to see who was hot.
AA meetings? Okay. Yeah,
that's like people that you would meet in public as opposed to on an app. You know, and people with common and similar interests and people that are on a similar life path to you. So something like that. I wouldn't go to bars because I don't drink.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something sad about that. I think there's something sad about old bars. And I guess I would maybe get on the apps, although they seem depressing. They seem.
So it's a good thing you're married.
Yeah.
Hold on to her.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to date right now.
I think that was an interesting one on the list that we didn't hit, is that if they're not wanting to marry you, they're just not that into you. Like, as someone married,
Do you still feel that like holds true? Because I feel like a lot of people have different views on marriage. So what do you think today, Dee?
That's a personal preference. If marriage is something that's important to you and they don't want to marry you, that's important, then you may not have the same goals. You may not be right for each other. But is marriage an important thing? I don't know that it is. I don't know that my relationship would be different with my wife if we weren't married. Maybe it would. I mean, I think we would have been through some tough times, so maybe we wouldn't be together. But as far as it being a thing that people have to aspire to, I don't believe that at all. I don't believe there's a right answer. You know, as far as marriage goes, people can do whatever they want.
So it's more about being on the same page.
It's more about being on the same page, yeah. I mean, some people really want to be married. They really want to be a part of that institution. They want the legality. They want that extra step. They want the ceremony, right. You know? They want that thing, and some people don't.
Let's hold that thought and take a quick break for a couple of messages.
Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away each year? Yeah, not great for our already struggling environment. That's why I'm so excited to talk about our partner today, Blue Land. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and the planet with the same powerful clean you're used to. And the concept is pretty simple. You just fill your reusable bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. I literally just tried out the laundry tablet, and instead of having to bring my huge container like I normally do down the hall, I just brought the one tablet and my clothes came out so clean, just as clean as normal. I'm fully on board. It just makes my life easier and I'm helping the environment. And the best part, Blue Land has a special offer for listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/dateable. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/dateable for 15% off. That's blueland.com/dateable to get 15% off. I am all about self-care these days, and guess what? Body care is also self-care. Taking care of your body is a moment to practice mindfulness, self-love, and compassion, all things that I am fully behind right now. That's why I'm so glad to share a promo from one of our new sponsors, Osea. I'm obsessed with their Mega Moisture Duo that provides instant firming hydration and delivers a full body glow. It makes me feel so confident and refreshed to walk out the door with unbelievably glowing skin. And there's nothing more I love than getting premium skincare products at an incredible value. So, show your skin some love with clean, vegan skin and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide and use the code DATEABLE at OseaMalibu.com. You'll get free samples with every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Head to OseaMalibu.com and use the code DATEABLE for 10% off.
Want relationship advice from one of the leading experts in the field of couples therapy? Then Reimagining Love is for you. Hosted by one of our favorite guests on Dateable, Dr. Alexandra Solomon. She is a clinical psychologist, couples therapist, professor, and award-winning author. It is your destination for profound, enlightening discussions about love, family, intimacy, and everything in between. But more than that, she gives us the opportunity to reimagine ourselves, our relationships, and our world. So on the show, Dr. Alexandra gives in-depth research-backed takes on topics like dating, jealousy, communication, commitment, personal growth, and features notable guests from the worlds of therapy, academia, and pop culture, such as me and Julie from Dateable, among other people you may have heard of like Esther Perel, Susan Cain, and Emily Nagoski. Her podcast is incredible, definitely worth a listen. We loved being on it, and we love having Dr. Alexandra on our show. So you can find her podcast, Reimagining Love, wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, Greg, I want to kind of go into Hollywood right now, because I feel like you're our resident Hollywood expert.
Sure.
We see all of our love lives are so heavily affected by the media and the movies we watch and the shows that we watch. Mm-hmm. But when we are, you know, peeling back the layers, especially what you said, what the publishers wanted, what the network wanted, what sells and what doesn't sell in Hollywood when it comes to dating and love? What are the storylines that networks love?
I mean, they still seem to go for the same kind of classic heteronormative stories that we hear over and over again.
Like marriage. Marriage sells.
marriage, I mean, look at the success of The Bachelor. You know, the show's been on forever.
Right.
It's heteronormative, beautiful people hanging out together. Most of the world has nothing in common with The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, and we're fascinated with
it. I find it so boring, but that's my personal take.
Well, I like Fuckboy Island. Fuckboy Island is pretty darn good.
Why do you like it?
I think it's well, I love Nikki Glaser. Let's start there. I love Nikki. Mm-hmm. I'm fascinated with the idea that you can tell whether somebody is or isn't a fuckboy. Like, they're doing all the same kind of he's just not that into you work on the show, trying to figure out whether somebody's legit or not.
Yeah.
You know, trying to figure out whether they're the real deal or whether they're running a story on you. And the fact that they have self-identified fuckboys in with self-identified nice guys is sort of an interesting kind of an interesting thing.
So while we're talking about Hollywood, I'd love your take on the movie if you're willing to share it. But I feel like all of the people, you know, kind of stood their ground. Like, there was the plot about, you know, the marriage piece, and that eventually came around for Jennifer Aniston's character. There was, you know, the plot around the cheater never leaves his wife, and that plot actually came to be too. But then the main character kind of ended up with someone that wasn't super. Like, she kind of seemed like she was getting the exception to the rule.
Completely. They broke the whole rule of the book.
Yeah. So why did that happen?
Hollywood. It's Hollywood. I didn't, you know, Liz and I didn't have a say.
Yeah. Really? Okay.
Yeah. And we were clear with them about it. We said it kind of, like, if he had come back at the end, if when he came back, she said, okay, that's fine. That's a great speech. Now come back and do it every day for the next 2 or 3 months, and we'll see if I feel differently. You know, if she owned the power in the relationship, if she had taken her own instead of just like, you know, No, people were mad about that. I got a lot of shit for that.
But I kind of feel like that's why we all justify shit. Because, like, movies, they need, like, the drama, right? Like, they couldn't just be, like, this guy that just did everything right and gave her no signs of question, and then they ended up together. It would be no plot. And I think people are looking for the plot in their own lives.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Totally. And they're waiting for that turnaround that doesn't really happen. I mean, those two people just shouldn't be together.
Yes.
And that stuff doesn't happen.
Exactly.
Because people want control, so they feel like they have the ability to change somebody, and that they'll be able to do something that makes the other person feel different and come back around.
I think that people, like, want the story a lot of times. Like, how do we get people to start seeing that the someone that calls you consistently and does all the right actions is interesting and sexy also, not just this person that's unattainable?
I don't know. I mean, we are obsessed with the unattainable. You know, we're obsessed with being rich. We're obsessed with being sexy. We're obsessed with all these things that may or may not be attainable for us, you know, but we love the idea that we're going to someday be really sexy, really rich, and really attainable.
So are those people just fucked then?
Yeah. Like- yeah. I mean, it's also what your self-worth is. It's what you think you deserve. And some people think they deserve somebody who's not interested.
Mm. We just have to separate Hollywood from reality. I think that's the problem, because, you know, people complain about the apps because it's not a good story. Meeting someone on Bumble is not something that you want to brag about because it's not interesting. But meeting someone at the grocery store, yeah, that's an interesting story because we've seen it in movies. But if we can separate the two somehow in our minds and say that's not reality, it's just entertainment, I think it would make our love lives better.
Well, and the thing too is the reason people don't like, there's nothing cinematic about meeting on an app. Nobody's running through a park to get your attention. Nobody's, you know, standing up at a club and making a big deal. Like, it's just somebody responded to your hello or whatever, however it works. And, you know, but that doesn't make it any less valid.
Right.
It's just as bad.
Yep. Exactly. Well, that's a good idea for an app is, what if you just, like, fuckboy island. Wow, that's so hard to say. People are self-proclaimed fuckboys. What if we had everybody rate themselves on a series of qualities, your kindness quality, your fuckboy meter, and just, you know, like, instead of listing your height and your eye color, how about that? Mm-hmm. How you describe your own qualities?
I don't think that's a bad idea. Yeah. But would people be honest?
I feel like the most narcissistic people would be like, I'm the best in every quality.
Yeah, no, I can't imagine somebody saying, you know, kindness, I'm going to put a 4.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I'm a dick.
I'm not that kind. I'm kind of a dick.
Hey, some self-proclaimed
yeah,
fuck boys
the fuck
might.
Boys will.
Or they know to like mess with people that are insecure that are mm-hmm. latching onto
oh,
that.
That's
right?
The whole thing. That's what makes them so deceptive is they're so good at the game.
Okay, so how do we get people? I feel like this is still the part I'm struggling with. Like, how do we get people to reframe that he's just not that into you is empowering? Kind of like the revelation that Miranda had versus making the justification to say anything but.
There's a real relief in when you say he's just not that into you about whoever, you're releasing them back into the world. They're suddenly not your problem anymore. They're not your problem. There's great power. There's great power. And like when you've been in something bad for a while and you finally decide to get out of it, as painful as it is, there's a little bit that feels like, good. Good for me. I made that choice. I made the right choice. I'm letting go of this person. They're not my concern anymore. I'm not in mm-hmm. charge of them. They can do whatever they want. They're gone. You know, and I feel like that's something people don't understand. You know, I talk to people all the time. I coach girls all the time and men, but mostly girls who've gone through breakups, recent breakups, and they just don't want to let go. And they're mm-hmm. trying, they always want me to be able to tell them how long of no contact before they can get back together.
Yes. Yep.
Oh my God. Always. That is so why people do the no yep. contact.
Yeah. I'm going to do no contact so that I get a result and not the result, which is to move on and to, you know, find other things to occupy your life and your time.
I think it goes back to the scarcity mindset again.
Yeah, totally. Because it is hard to find a connection.
Yeah, or that you think that a connection you've had with someone is so special that you're never going to find it again. So you hold on to it when it's probably just something right. you could kind of construed in your mind. I remember in 2009 when this movie came out, I was going through a really hard time of getting over this guy I had dated for 3 months and I thought he was the one. So when the movie came out, I was like, okay, he's just not that into me right now. But if right. I give it 1 month of no contact and I just casually do an evening jog past his work and just run into him, that is the cutest story ever. Then we reunite, hopefully in the rain. It's all going to work out. That was the narrative I was telling myself in my head. So yes, in some yeah. ways it helped me. Yes. But then I still was creating these stories. For some reason, the stories just really fucked me up.
Yeah. And it's just such a common thing that people do. And you're right. And you only went out with them for 3 months, but you created this whole world around it. Persona that probably wasn't really even true, you know, about this guy and your connection. And, you know, because connections are really rare.
I think there's a few reasons. Like, I can definitely point to times in my life that I stood for less than behavior. And I think some of it was that I just wasn't really ready for a real relationship. I didn't know that at the time. But I think, like, if you really are ready and want someone that, like you said, you know, values you and does all the things and treats you like you should, you wouldn't stand for that behavior in the first place. So I think some of it just might be where you are in time. And all of us might experience it. I think as long as you're learning from it and not just repeating it over and over again with a new person, then that just might be like some of it might be part of the course. I think another piece for me was like there was like a lot of ego that was attached mm-hmm. to it. Like if all my friends had boyfriends, I wanted someone to talk about, mm-hmm. even if I knew that person wasn't a good partner. And in like retrospect, I'm like, I should have just like tossed that person to the curb
right.
and look for someone that actually was a partner. But in the moment, you're kind of like grasping to whatever you have
yeah.
to kind of be part of it or whatever. Mm-hmm. And maybe that goes back to not being really ready.
I think it does. I think grow and we start to understand what a relationship really is and what I truly need and what I, mm-hmm. you know, what I don't actually need. But I think the movies tell me I need, but I don't really yeah. need that. You know, like mm-hmm. I love my wife with all my heart. And the reason I probably wouldn't date is I just don't think I'd find another person like her and I'm not interested in looking. So right. that would just be it for me, you know, mm-hmm. I imagine. But I don't need all the things I thought I needed when I first met her. I thought I needed to be coddled a lot. I thought I needed a lot of affirmation. I don't. I just like it with it. She shows up. That's enough for me. That's right. The love is right there. She shows up for me, you know, in a variety of different ways all day long, every day for years. And there doesn't have to be lots of big grand gestures and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's another thing that we get from the movies that isn't reality also.
Well, and people put stock in things like birthdays and anniversaries and all that stuff. And they make it this, they make them these hills that people have to climb. As opposed to, you know, like we've gone an anniversary without even exchanging a card and then, you know, giving her a tennis bracelet. Like it just, it depends on the year and the time and where we're at, what we're up to, what's going on in our lives with our kids and all the rest of that stuff.
And it probably doesn't mean that there's something better or worse going on in your marriage.
Not at all. Not at all.
Yeah. Well, because in Hollywood movies, everything culminates to something. There's a climax. And in real life, when we culminate to an event and nothing eventful happens, we are suddenly disappointed by really no reason at all, other than these movies telling us that it should have been some sort of grand gesture. And then you also mentioned something earlier, too, is that in these movies, because they're only an hour and a half, 2 hours, there has to be a transformation of a character. There's an arc. So that happens very fast in movies. But in real life, people don't change that fast. In fact, some people don't change at all. But for some reason, we feel that maybe we have the power to change someone, or someone will suddenly change their ways for us.
There's something about romantic comedies, though. One person's always broken and has to get better.
Yeah,
right.
You know, they have a, they suffer from a deficiency or a lack or something. And then by the end, they, that has been changed. You know, I mean, if you think about it, really, they're not making romantic comedies anymore. I mean, when was the what was the last big romantic comedy?
No, they're not.
That's true.
I mean, maybe something on net, maybe something on Netflix. Those ones that, that are sort of more geared towards my 16-year-old.
Yeah, but like you're right, big blockbuster ones. I can't. I guess like La La Land, but they didn't end up together.
No,
that's like one. I mean, that wasn't even that long ago, but that was
La La Land was very adult.
It was. It was 100. It was, and I think that the we think we can fix people is why people stay in these situations or situationships that aren't going anywhere. Yeah. That are clearly there. Yeah. La La Land, I think, had one of the best endings ever.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
Of just like what could have been, but then realizing like that isn't, the love between us wasn't necessarily for the long haul.
Yeah, yeah. And he was an insufferable jazz dick.
I think, though, that like, I don't know if about you both, but maybe you a more than Greg, since you clearly just had this down from day one. But I feel like going through these people that just weren't that into me, I feel like it changed what I was looking for a partner. Like, I remember like really wanting someone that was funny, like that was really important to me. And I think I've changed that to be like someone I can laugh with and enjoy each other's company. And I've put like a much higher weight on consistency and reliability. And those were things that I definitely weren't even thinking about as qualities in my like early 20s and even like early 30s.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I mean, I had music requirements for people that I was dating.
Because you're a musician. Like, you're a music snob.
Right. But now I could give a shit. My wife and I don't listen to anything the same. And
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. It matters none at all. It matters not at all.
Well, because in Hollywood, again, going back to Hollywood, these movies tell you you have to have standards, but those standards are oftentimes superficial standards, because that's what you can depict in movies. That's what's entertaining. But when it comes to relationships, our standards should be based on feelings. I think since this movie came out, I had to reshift how I feel, how someone makes me, or what someone does to make me feel like they are that into me. And it's always a gut check, because we know when someone's just not that into you. Like, we know, we just have to check back and say, okay, well, this person's not, definitely not making me feel like they're that into me.
Yeah,
right.
Totally.
Usually, like when we're attached to these people that aren't that into you, a lot of it is because we're grasping the superficial checklist. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, you're right that Hollywood, that's how it visually depicts. And I think dating apps have the same problem. We've talked about this before, that you can't show someone's kindness levels like on a dating app. You show that they're 6'4" or, you know, went to Stanford or whatever, like, you know, thing that's kind of like bragging rights that ultimately doesn't mean anything either. I'm so glad that we're able to rehash this book / movie / like everything, because I think at the end of the day, even in 2021, the same principles apply.
They do.
And I think like my biggest takeaway from this conversation is a lot of times we try to overthink everything with dating. Mm-hmm. And when we get into the pattern of overthinking and overanalyzing, that's usually a sign that they're not that into you. I think that the relationships that flow the most effortlessly are the ones that you know you can be your authentic self and say what you need to do and not worry about these things. Like, that's when they are that into you. And I love this. Like, we keep saying this. It's like the feeling that you get. If you break it down logically and try to like step out of, I'm in this situation and would I give my friend this advice? Like, why would you want to be with someone where you're the one that's making all the plans or you never think they're going to text you back or whatever that might be? Like, I think we need to kind of look things, and it's hard, it's way easier said than done, but instead of getting defensive, like really be like, what do I want? I think so much of the time we've talked to people in these situations, it's all about the other person, but I think it needs to come back to you. And usually what we've seen, once people like let that person go, they usually end up finding someone that is that into them.
Yeah, no, totally. That is what happens. It's good relationships are also wildly uncinematic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're dull.
Yeah.
They're not interesting to hear about. You know, people get along and then they fuck and they love each other and they they do stuff together. And when they don't want to do stuff together, they don't do stuff together. And, you know, they figure out how to have friends and family and all the rest of that stuff. And it's just, you know, and it's in the constant negotiation all the time. But it's, you know, but it's not traumatic and all over the place.
That's so true. I think that's such an important takeaway that like we need to stop creating this storyline, like let the storyline play out of just two people doing life together. It doesn't need to be this roller coaster that we feel like we need to go to be on to make this big story.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And that was going to be my biggest takeaway too, is I think we can always pause and ask, am I looking for a partner to co-star in a rom-com or my partner to co-star in my real life? And I think that's always a good way to filter someone's actions. Is this person's actions something that's feeding into the movie in my head or in real life? And when your answer is movie, it probably means that they have pretty erratic behavior, because in these movies, their behavior is all over the place, because that's what keeps these movies entertaining. Things are constantly happening. And that's...
They've got to put something in the trailer.
Yes. Like,
there's got to be some running. There has to be some running. Doors have to be slammed.
Crying.
And then you're like, do I want that in real life? No.
Glasses need to be raised. You know, it's such a thing. And then you realize, no, that's a movie. That's what a movie does.
Yeah.
You know, right. Tom Cruise comes running in at the last minute and then declares that you're my other half and whatever, you know, like it. You know, they're dramatic.
Yeah. It's kind of like how we can, I think a lot of people are able to separate porn from sex as like more entertainment versus reality.
Yeah.
But I think we need to do the same for dating with movies. Like it's the same thing. It's just a different side of the coin.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And we need to understand what that into you means. It doesn't need to be the big gestures, but it does mean, well, baseline is that they're not an asshole. So all the things that you would expect a kind, normal human being to do, that's just baseline. And then anything a little bit above that means that they probably are that into you. For my partner, something that he did for me today that I feel like this man truly loves me is that we switched cars and he put the dog car seat in my car. Because he knew that I would have to transport the dogs. He did that in the morning. I know that they would never write that into a movie because people would fall asleep and be like, this is the dumbest movie ever. But in my real life movie, I was like, this man fucking loved me. He thought about me today.
No, that's 100% it. It's all that little stuff that when you look at it really adds up to being something so much bigger than whatever the big gesture is you're looking for.
Yeah, I think the whole like the boring movie, because I like think about that too in my current relationship that I feel like is a very solid relationship. I'm like, there's nothing to talk about. Like there's nothing to bring
up. It's a good thing.
Besides that, you know, and I think it's important. And I think we should have grace though if we're not in that place right now. Like UA and I have both been in situations where someone was just not that into us. And I think it teaches you what you'll not stand for in the future if you choose to learn from it. It's some of it's inevitable that you're going to have this happen. A lot of it's just growing and, you know, realizing your worth, essentially.
Right.
But I think where it becomes problematic is if you're in situation after situation that's a different face and name, but it's the same thing happening, just a different variation of the story. And then at that point, maybe it's time to like look into therapy or really analyze like, why am I doing what I'm doing if I truly want a committed relationship? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. 100%.
So Greg, what are some things you're working on currently other than your podcast with Kane?
I'm really interested in creating a reality show, and I haven't figured out exactly what that is yet. But I've been watching a lot of dating reality shows, and I'm trying to figure out how to create one myself.
Okay.
I'm so very inspired.
You like all the islands, Fuckboy Island, Love Island, probably Temptation Island. Any other any other reality shows other than The Bachelor? We've talked about that too. Any other ones that have been on your radar?
Well, I love all the cooking ones too.
Mm, okay.
Yeah, I love all of them. I mean, I like a lot of reality television.
I feel like there's something with cooking and dating.
What I'm thinking of.
Yes. There are three dating reality shows in the works just because I get all the casting calls for them. One is Your Mom Plays the Matchmaker. So your mom goes on the date with your potential date, and then she decides who you actually get to date. So that's one that's coming out. Another one is...
Didn't they have that?
Do they already? Maybe it's a different season.
I feel like that was an MTV show from like a zillion years ago.
I mean...
Like Date My Mom or something.
I would never trust my mom to find my mate, but hey, some people might. No. The second one that's coming out is some sort of dance show where you learn a dance with your blind date and you don't get to see them. I think everyone's masked, but then you learn a dance together. And then at the end, you evaluate each other on their partnership skills, something like that. So that's the second one. And then the third one is something about people love exes, but I think this is like you set up your ex with someone else's ex. Those are the three that I know are coming out.
Wow. Okay.
If that's any inspiration for you.
Okay. No, it's good. I like to know. I want to know what's going on. You know, I want to know what the room temperature is. In the meetings I've had lately, everybody wishes they bought Fuckboy Island.
Really?
Everybody is like, yeah, that's sort of
why?
Because people like it.
People love the word fuckboy too.
Yeah. Yeah. They like how the show breaks convention. I think they just like, everybody likes to get good looking people in bathing suits.
That is the key. That is essentially the key to reality success. That is not the key to finding a long-term partner in the real world.
Not at all. But in reality television, if you can get anybody into a bathing suit, you're in good shape.
Oh, there is such a disconnect from reality TV. It should not even be called reality for dating.
Oh, I know. No kidding. Close. Yeah. This is the farthest thing from reality TV.
The opposite of reality.
Yeah, totally.
So entertaining, though.
Well, thank you so much, Greg. We were so happy to have you
on. God,
this
has
been such a fun convo.
Yeah, it's been awesome. You guys are great.
And for anybody who wants to check out Don't Take Bullshit from Fuckers, your podcast with Kane Holloway, where can they find that podcast?
Mm-hmm. On any one of the fine Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, all that kind of stuff. And then I'm It's Gregors on Instagram. And I coach people. So if that's interesting to you, if you want a coaching session, just DM me at It's Gregors and we'll set something up. Or go to my website, gregorybarrant.com, and there's coaching information there.
So you teach people how to not take bullshit from fuckers. I feel like a lot of people need that. That's the way to crack this. He's just not that into you, Kate.
Yeah, exactly.
I can just see Greg in these sessions just being like, what the fuck are you doing? Don't take that bullshit. He's obviously not that into you.
That should be your reality show.
I always say to him, Do you want me to say it now? Do you want me to say it now? Okay. He's just not that into you.
Basically, they do the session just to get you
to hear me to say it. Okay, let me say it. Let me do it. That's why you called. This is why you're paying an hourly rate. He's just not that into you.
Money well spent.
That is a good final takeaway that I think if we start to reframe he's just not that into you as, you know, ego crushing to it's paving the way for someone that is that into you. I think totally. That will really help liberate us with that statement. Yeah. And like you said, it's patterns. It's not one-off. So
yeah.
I think people could maybe misuse that statement too.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and throw them back into the ocean where they could potentially find someone better suited for them. Why hang on to those fuckers, exactly. Right?
Let them swim to Fuckboy Island.
Yeah, let them swim to Fuckboy Island. Exactly.
That is the best way to wrap this up. Thank you again, Greg, for being on our show. And for all of our listeners, we would really love it if you got on Podcast Review Island with us. Just go into Apple Podcasts and give us 5 stars. If you give us 5 stars, then we can send you a recording of Greg saying, he's just not that into you. That's our gift to you. Yeah. That's our gift with purchase.
We'll just play that on repeat. Yeah. Just, you should go to bed every night with that. You should. That should be your thing. You should make like a meditation app.
I have a meditation. If you sign up to my website, if you sign up to get the emails, you get a free meditation that is don't take bullshit from fuckers.
Perfect.
There you go.
Already covered.
Already done.
And it's a whole thing. It's really funny. It's really funny and fun.
Brilliant. Love I'm going to download that tonight and fall asleep to it.
Oh, you'll like it. It's got music, the whole thing. It's great.
Oh, it's got music? Yes, I'm done. I'm done. Yes.
Yeah.
So there.
Yeah. It's like the new words of affirmation that totally. You need to listen to every day.
100%. You'll dig it. You'll dig it.
You should totally lead like seminars.
I do sometimes. Yeah. It's fun.
That's great. Awesome. Well, on that note, we're going to wrap this up.
Stay Dateable.
The Dateable Podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts you'll love at frolic.media/podcasts.
Want to continue the conversation? First, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter with the handle @DateablePodcast. Tag us in any post with the hashtag #StayDateable, and trust us, we look at all of those posts. Then head over to our website, datablepodcast.com. There you'll find all the episodes, as well as articles, videos, and our coaching service with vetted industry experts. You can also find our premium Why series, where we dissect, analyze, and offer solutions to some of the most common dating conundrums. We're also downloadable for free on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Overcast, Stitcher Radio, and other podcast platforms. Your feedback is valuable to us, so don't forget to leave us a review. And most importantly, remember to stay dateable.